This is episode 4 of
Right Here,
Right Now. Hi, I'm Annabelle.
And I'm Alice.
And today we'll be interviewing my dad's dad, Opa. How are you going today, Opa?
I'm very well today, thank you.
That's very nice. And today, helping us with some of our questions is our cousin, Sadie.
Hi.
So we are going to be starting with some of the things that happened while you were growing up. So, Sadie, would you like to start?
Where were you born and when?
Geelong, 30th of March 1947, but I can't tell you the time.
Oh, yeah, it's very hard to remember the time.
Yes, I was not old enough to remember the time.
What is your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is falling in a pit full of water.
Oh, where was that located?
At home. It was a hole that my dad had dug in the ground that he could get into when he had to on a fairly number of frequent occasions. When the car didn't work, he had to get in underneath the car and try and work out what was wrong with it. He couldn't afford to take it to a garage. However, the other plus was that we didn't have a car very much either. They kept breaking down.
How old were you when this happened?
I think I was 3, 4. I don't know.
So quite young?
Quite young.
So I'm guessing you didn't really know how to swim during then?
Well, I never did learn to swim, and I didn't learn to swim because we couldn't afford to learn to swim. So it is the most important thing is to learn to swim.
What was life like while you were growing up?
Oh, you played, you had some friends, but otherwise outside of the home did very little.
What is the naughtiest thing you've done as a child?
Ooh, and I'm not saying I'm Mr. Goody Two Shoes. I can't think of anything in particular. I really can't think of anything.
Oh, really?
Really, I can't think of anything naughty I did.
Well,
do you believe that?
That's memorable.
I think I kind of do believe that because you are very good. So, can you please tell me a bit about your family while you were growing up, like who you lived with?
I lived with Mum, Dad, 2 older sisters, 1 younger brother. Dad worked in a factory. He worked very hard. He also worked around the house, the garden in particular, and we lived on a corner block, so it was a very large garden area, but he worked on that. He planted fruit trees. He worked very, very hard. Mum stayed at home looking after children, cooking. My 2 sisters, well, they just went to school, and like me, left when they got to the minimum school leaving hours, like my parents as well. And my brother the same, although my brother was very naughty.
What was your childhood friends?
My childhood friend? I had 2 main childhood friends. One was Ian Sandworth, and one was Greg Waugh.
Did you meet them both at school?
Ian Sandworth lived over the road. Greg Waugh lived 3, 4 doors up. Ian certainly were in the same year at school. I presume we may have been in the same grade in some years. Greg was a few years younger.
What pets did you have?
Not many. I'm not sure why we didn't have pets, probably as much as anything we couldn't afford them. But 2 I remember, but they were certainly, I was in my teenage years. One was Darkie, who was a sort of black Kelpie type of dog. And the other one was Ricky, who was a galah, who was put in a cage and only my father could get him out. He bit everybody else. Didn't want to come out.
Oh, was your father good with animals?
He was good with Ricky. I don't know about anything else or any other animal, but he was good with Ricky. Somehow he managed to do Ricky. And I'm certainly in double figures in age at that point, if not more.
What has been your funniest moment that you can remember from being a child?
As a child, the funniest moment? I can't remember anything in particular that stands out. No, I really can't remember anything in particular.
Okay, now, Let's move on to a bit more of the adulthood questions and growing up into your older stages. So, in episode 9 of When We Did the Right Talk, we were interviewing Omar and we asked her how you two met. She said you were pen pals and that's how you two met each other. But how did you two become pen pals?
Well, it was me that did the first thing. I received through the mail from somewhere one day, couldn't even see where it had come from, a sheet of paper, just one, it was a green paper and it was typed, fully typed on two pages, with names and addresses and a few details of interest. On both sides of the paper, probably 40, 50 names, and Omar was amongst them.
So
I looked through them and I'm like, oh, this one's interesting, when I saw Omar's. And I thought, South Africa, it's not even in Australia. The other little, which is about all in Australia. But anyway, I had a go and I thought, I'll write a letter and see what happens. I wrote to several, in fact, but I wrote a special, wrote a very standard letter to all the others, but I wrote a special letter to Omar. Put a bit more into that one.
Have you travelled much during your life?
Well, only in the last bits of it. Otherwise, no. We first went overseas in 1977. We went to South Africa to visit Omar's parents and family. We then went to Bangladesh and we were there for nearly a year. We then didn't go overseas again until 2013. We went to America to our daughter Patricia's home. And we travelled there and I achieved one of my aims in life. I saw the Grand Canyon. And then in 2019, we went to England to our son, Stephen, who is still living in Wales. And we saw a few things there and I went around Europe and saw a number of things. Could have seen a little bit more, but I was happy with what I saw.
How was Bangladesh?
Bangladesh I loved. We didn't want to come home from Bangladesh. We loved it so much, but I didn't have a job. Your dad was a baby at the time. Well, he turned 2 in Bangladesh. And we had to come back for his education. And that seems to have paid off. And all the other European missionaries in Bangladesh all had their children going to schools in other countries because the schooling in Bangladesh was very poor. It may be better now, but it was very poor then.
How were the locals in Bangladesh?
Very good. They were very kind. They would give you their last scrap of food in order to be generous and hospitable.
Oh, that sounds very nice. I'd love to visit there.
It would be nice to visit there.
Who was your favourite child?
Ooh, depends what day of the week it is. I've got 5 children, so we forget about the weekends, but it's a bit hard to know. I could have done them in age order, which means your dad would be Monday and Sadie's mum would be Tuesday. And I could have done them in alphabetical order. So, no, I had no favourites. We tried our hardest with each one of them and tried our hardest to make sure that they did in life what they wanted to do. That's the important thing you've got to remember. Try and do what you want to do, but you've got to work very hard to get it.
What jobs have you had in life?
What jobs have I had in life? That is getting... to be a very, very hard question. It depends if you're talking about what positions have I had to rely on to get income or what actual work I did. They are 2 entirely different things. The job I've enjoyed most would be Santa Claus. So, absolutely love Santa Claus, but I won't be able to do that anymore. And I would have kept going as long as I could have there. Well, I did, didn't I? Other jobs I've done, latter ones have been a door-to-door job interviewer, a school assistant, particularly with the preschools. I enjoyed that very much. prior to that, I worked in the Victorian Public Service, which I enjoyed very much. And the other jobs I had that I enjoyed were a short stint at as a paymaster at the Wesley Central Vista. I actually enjoyed the job, but the organisation wasn't going anywhere. And they did their dirty on me as well. That's about it. I won't call it a job, but I got paid. Activity I really, really enjoyed was being a Queanbeyan councillor, where you get around trying to do things for people that they want from their local government.
If you could go back in time, what would you have done differently, or what would you change?
Oh dear. Well, assuming I had any power to change these things, I would have changed the circumstances of my education and my parents, indeed whole family to be fair, dismissal of the need for education, that it was just a bloody nuisance between napkins and going out to work, being old enough to leave school. The other thing I would change would be my last year at university, where a certain event happened that I still don't know why, I can only guess, which completely threw at 28 me into, for the rest of my life, a completely unknown situation, unpredictable, undesirable employment situation. I have no idea how I could change either of those, none.
Who do you most admire?
Oh dear. Now you see, it makes it difficult. When I say everybody in this room, I might be in a bit of trouble. Oh dear. I could say Polly Farmer, but that wouldn't make your Omar happy, would it?
Well, I don't even know who she is, Polly Farmer.
Oh dear, she. Polly Farmer was the greatest footballer who ever played the game, and probably always will be. Does that make any difference?
What team was she on?
What team?
Yeah.
Geelong, of course.
Is that your favourite?
I was born in Geelong. Yes, of course it's my favourite. No, Omar would be the person I admire the most. Yeah, Omar's got all sorts of sense and sensibility and abilities that I haven't got.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to some more crazier questions that kind of don't really have anything to do with it, except one of them in particular that I would really like to ask. So, why do you hate yogurt? What did it ever do to you?
Yoga or yogurt?
Yogurt.
Yogurt? It just tastes horrible. It's rotten stuff before you eat it, and then people eat it. It's a very strange thing to do.
Is there any flavour of yogurt that you like any at all?
No. I have eaten it though, because they give it to me in the hospital. They give me yogurt, so I think, well, it's that or starve. I don't fancy the starve idea. So I better eat this stuff, and when they give me a little list, they bring a list around of what meals you want for breakfast, etc. I never tick yogurt. So I can get out of it that way.
I love yogurt.
Oh, well, you better come with me to hospital. You can sit in the chair next to me. And when they bring me my yogurt, you can have a free tub of yogurt. And you can stay there for weeks if you have to, just to get the yogurt.
That's kind of funny.
What superpowers would you want to have?
And it can be any superpowers, like, I don't know, just any crazy one. Like the powers to make food really well. The powers to be able to like any type of food. The powers for you to be able to just create something randomly. It can be any power that you think would suit you and would help you out best.
Well, the powers I would like, and these should happen anyway, are to get rid of two things in this world, and it will solve, I think, all the problems of the world. One, inequality. In other words, not many people, but enough, having everything. Too much of everything. Oh, they just waste stuff. Throw food out, all sorts of horrible things. And the other one, of course, is way, 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 way more people not having enough. Not even a proper food to eat, not even a proper bed, not even a proper house to live in, a reasonable house.
So you'd make that all equal, so they all have the same?
If you had equality, I think you would solve the world's problems. One, and two, the other one you need to get rid of is overpopulation, too many people. So, and that can start, both of those can start immediately. I think we've lost the overpopulation one. And I don't hold out much hope for the equality one either. So that's what you do, and if you get rid of people, and some countries are having a lower birth rate, and it's gradually happening, but the major ones are, for different reasons, Japan and Russia. They're two countries that have much lower population growth. They're one in Russia is interesting. They basically drink themselves to death with alcohol. The men die at 59, would you believe? 59, they drink too much vodka. Even the women drink a lot of vodka. And in Japan, people haven't been happy to have children because they can't get jobs, because all the old people stay in the jobs, they get the permanent jobs, and the younger ones don't. And if they can't get a permanent job, they're very, very worried about how they provide for any children that they have. So they're not having the children. So both countries have got a higher mixture, a higher number of older people, but and ultimately it will benefit those countries.
Okay, so we've asked you why you hate yogurt. Are there any other foods you hate?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any. Omar might be able to help me here. Can't just be yogurt. There must be other stuff I don't like. Spice, too much spice. I don't know why you've got to have so much spice in food, but people have it. Beyond that, I can't think of anything.
What is your favourite food?
Yeah, like what foods do you like? Because, I mean, you have to have at least one thing that you enjoy to eat.
Pineapple. Fish and chips, generally. Good roast. Cherry ripes. And I said pineapple juice. So they're the main ones.
So a lot of pineapple kind of stuff?
Monte Carlos.
I love pineapple. It's very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is your favourite colour?
Well, you see, this could be a tough one. I've probably between two, and I'm not sure which one, yellow and purple. Maybe yellow.
Those used to be my two favourite colours as well.
Oh, you don't like them now?
I do like them, except I also really like green now, so I have three favourites.
I like all colours. Colours are good, and they, of course, are very useful colours, because you can tell things apart by the colours. Oh, it's that red one over there. Oh, it's that purple one over there. Oh, good, okay, you know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, because, like, since oranges and apples kind of look the same, if they were both just like grey or something, then it would be harder to tell them apart than if one was just orange and one was just red.
The same colours, you've got to look at them close. Yes.
So, this is one kind of talking about your past, but what is your proudest moment?
Well, that's not a hard one. Marrying Omar. I knew when I married Omar, I got one thing at least right in my life. It was a very selfish thought, that one, really. Because it's a matter of what Omar thought, oh God, I've got to grow up with this bloke for the rest of my life. But from my point of view, I thought I knew how good she was, what a good human being she was, how lovely she was, da 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 da, how kind she was. So it was the best thing I ever did was marry Omar. And I hated being single, and I really did well with marrying. And I thoroughly enjoyed my wedding day. I've never enjoyed myself so much in my life as my wedding day.
Sadie, do you have any questions?
If you had to choose anything to live with for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Good health.
That's a very good choice.
It's very handy.
Do you have any additional information that you would like to share?
No, not really. I think you've, in bits and pieces, got most of my life.
Okay, and this is going to be a kind of weirder question. What is the grossest thing that's ever happened to you?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. You know, not sort of falling in a tub full of horrible stuff or anything like that. And I'm thinking of, I think that's what you're after. I could expand the description of the word grossest to refer to some of the things done to me by others that I had no choice on, or any knowledge they were coming or why they happened or anything. But I'm thinking about something more physical, and I really can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I've heard that you swallowed a fly once and you broke your arm by slipping in vomit.
Probably swallowed a fly, we probably all have. To some extent, sometimes.
Oh, yeah, my dad did one on Christmas Day. We were walking up and around a hill for exercise, and he inhaled the fly, and he kept coughing to try and get it out, and he had to have water. And in the end, I'm pretty sure he swallowed it.
Yeah, he swallowed a fly like the old woman. Yeah, all right. No, I can't really think of anything like that. And what was that? Oh, I broke my arm when I slipped in vomit. Omar's nodding, so I'm presuming there's some... Oh, Astra! Yeah, that's right, yeah, Astra's one of the foster children we had. She was vomiting and stuff all over the place, and I was trying to stop her getting around the house, vomiting all over the place, and I was chasing her, and I slipped in the vomit. And broke my arm. I think she broke my arm twice, didn't she? Yeah, I don't know what the other one was.
When did you decide to foster kids?
We decided to foster kids pretty well straight away when we got married. And the reason we decided to foster kids when we got married, and here comes a joke, is Omar said to me when we got married, even before we got married, well, no, probably not before, wasn't much time before, that she could never have any children, so that was going to be the way we would have children. So pretty well straight away, so 1973.
When did you guys first meet in person, Omar and you?
First met in person at the Tullamarine Airport in Melbourne, about midnight on a Friday, just before Saturday. And that's because Omar flew out from South Africa into Melbourne to come and marry me.
So as soon as she arrived, did you two get married or did you wait a few days?
We waited a few days. We had to wait a few days because you have to do these things waiting a few days. From midnight on that Friday, we got married at midday on the Monday.
So that sounds very interesting.
It was very interesting.
When you first saw Omar at the airport, did you know it was her or did you just think it was another person?
Now I don't know what Omar wants me to say at this point. but she's not given any indication. I'll say no.
Okay. So I think that about wraps up all the questions. Thank you so much for answering them today.
That's my pleasure. Thank you for asking.
And I think that your answers have been very nice and informational. And before we end this, I'd like to say a fact, because recently we went to Tasmania and went to this amazing place called Seahorse World. So this is a fact that we got from there. Did you know that male seahorse actually give birth instead of the women?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think they might be one of the only things that actually do that.
Well, I think human women would be very, very admirable of male seahorses. They could go off and party with their mates and have a good time and leave it all to the seahorses. Come on, raise the kids. We're going off and having a good time with our mates. So seahorses are probably fairly good, aren't they? Well, us blokes could learn from them.
My favourite is the Tasmanian pot-bellied one, and the males, to attract the females, they try and puff up their bellies. And when the males and females, to try and symbolise that for their love, that they can be together, they link their tails and they follow each other's moves, and they have to do that for quite a few days.
Yeah, well, it can happen. Blokes don't take so long. Most blokes are about 27 seconds, I think, but seahorses, I think, get it fairly right, don't they?
Yeah.
Several days.
And then if they make any mistake, they have to start all over again, which that would be very, very annoying.
Well, yeah, but human blokes, I don't know about the mistakes part, but things don't work the way they want. If they want to create a child, they have to start again too as well. But I think most blokes don't get too upset about that.
So that about ends the podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Alice, would you like to say anything?
No.
Sadie?
No.
Well, next episode, we will either be interviewing my sister Alice, like we did in the Right Talk a few months back, quite a while back, when she was like 4 years old. And then we might be interviewing Sadie if she's up for it.
Okay.
So, thank you for listening to
Right Here,
Right Now.
Where's this going to be broadcast to? Around the world?
Yep.
Oh dear. Okay, well, hello world. Boo to Donald Trump. And by the time we broadcast this, people might be half forgetting Trump. So, we don't know.
We broadcast this in like a day.
Hey? Maybe. Yeah, okay, well that's fair enough. I can see you on the radio or on the television when you grow up. There you go. You'll be like on Sunrise or something like that. Early in the morning saying, hello, good morning, here's what's happening in the world.
You missed out that you went to Hong Kong for our honeymoon.
I wasn't asked about
it's
that.
It's still recording, you didn't add that.
So does that mean if we say it now, you can add it into
the wedding was better. Well, the Hong Kong was great, but the wedding, yeah, the whole thing.
Where did you go on your honeymoon?
Oh dear, we're going to the honeymoon. We went to Hong Kong. We went to Hong Kong because I, before Omar came along, had a foster child with World Vision in Hong Kong. So we decided to go to Hong Kong to see her. There was a degree of disappointment with that in that World Vision were not looking after her the way they should have. She was in her third year of grade two at her class, and they really hadn't put in the effort to make sure she was actually coming to school. We were not happy with that. But we did enjoy her company and that of her brothers, and we had a great time at the posh hotels we went to. They all went there and they ate everything. They'd never seen so much food. It was very funny watching them eat.
That's very
nice. I loved my honeymoon, of course. That was part of the wedding, but I loved it all. with Omar.
Anything else you want to add?
Anything else you want?
Omar, right. Are there any other questions you'd like us to ask Opa?
The second time he fell and broke his arm, he fell on vegetable oil that was to try to drink and spilled a little bit.
Was it?
They won't be able to hear that.
She was dangerous with Astra. She was dangerous. She shirt fronted Stephen and put him through the window. And Stephen's 7 years older, six. So he was bigger than her.
When were you the most scared?
When was I the most scared? Now that's a very interesting question. There are a number of times in my life that I was scared. I was scared for my family, not for myself. I was confused and bewildered many times when I was single, because I really didn't know what was happening in the world or how it worked or anything. But the most scared I was, in fact, was after we had finished very abruptly and I thought unjustifiably as house parents for a school. I had no job, and we were going to have no home. And we had two children at that point and a third almost here. So that was the most scared I've ever been, I think. I've been very unhappy and worried on other occasions, but I had some sort of fallback after university. I had a job for at least 2 years, more if I wanted. And in the public service, I at least had a permanent position, I won't say job. So we had our income guaranteed on those two occasions, but not that middle one. But after about 3 weeks, I got a job. It was about 5 weeks until I started the job, but it was about 2 weeks between finishing as house parents and getting the job. That was the scaredest I've been. But there were certainly many occasions, particularly in the public service, where I was pretty scared not knowing what they would do with me. And I never got any indication after that of what they would do with me. They just did it. No explanation. So that was pretty scary unknown, but I still had income. At least I had that. I could look after my family just. So there you are. That was my scariest.
Ask Opa about when he left school. How come he left school?
When you left school, how come did you leave it?
Well, I mentioned my family had no regard for education, and they had no regard for education because what you did in those days when you were my age is you went and worked in a factory, and that's what my dad did. That's what my two older sisters did. They went out to work as soon as they got to school leaving age. Auntie Margaret, in fact, was 13 and got a job working somewhere. You could get jobs pretty easily then. And that's what I did, and I was told that you have to go out and work because we need your money, boy, was the answer from the statement from my father. There was no logical reason why I should stay at school because my two sisters hadn't. My parents hadn't. They'd all left at the very youngest age, 14, as I say, Margaret, 13. And so I did what everybody else did to the school and in the family. But my dad did me a favour in that he somewhere spotted an advertisement for a job as a junior postal officer, which was delivering telegrams, which was things they did in those days where they'd write the things down and they'd go to the house with that message and take it to the people at the house. Now they do it all on the internet and all sorts of things, email and stuff like that. The only problem with that job was I had to ride a bicycle. I'd never ridden a bicycle, never learned how to ride a bicycle, never owned a bicycle. So I had to learn very quickly how to ride a bicycle. And that involved a lot of bruises and scratches and pains and falling off. And eventually I got there. But never ever said in any part of anything I was given in relation to the job or told in relation to the job that you're going to have to ride a bicycle. I think the assumption was made, not unreasonably, that every child could ride a bicycle. Well, that's because I assumed every child had a bicycle. The only one in my family who had a bicycle was my older sister, Helen. And I was probably at least 12 when she got a bicycle. It was her bicycle, so I didn't ride it. The first bicycle I had, I bought myself from my money working as a telegram boy.
That sounds like a very interesting job. Was it hard?
Well, for a 14-year-old who's full of energy, it probably wasn't all that hard. But yeah, in fact, it probably was fairly hard. One of the things we had to do was we lived at sort of one end of the area in which we delivered telegrams, and most of the telegrams we had to go up a street called Victoria Street. And Victoria Street seemed to always have a gale of wind blowing straight down into where I was riding the bike. So that was a bit tough, but otherwise I got very fit and I loved it. And I wasn't very long at delivering the telegrams because they put me in charge of the other telegram boys when I was 14. So that was surprising.
What are your hopes and dreams for the future?
What are they now? To live as long as I can. And, as a point to that one, to see all my grandchildren grow up and to see them doing things or on the way to doing things that make them very happy and, unfortunately, has to be part of it, give them a sufficient income, enough money, to be able to do the things they want to do, including, of course, having a family and children. Because it's terrible to have to struggle trying to raise children if you haven't got enough money. And Omar and I were borderline for that, but we got there.
It's your podcast,
Andy. So you reckon your dad's done all right out of Omar and me being his parents?
Definitely. He's
done very well. And what about Mum?
She's good.
She's good? Is that because we were her parents?
Yeah.
So, you're very great role models.
Do you know that Opa won a scholarship to go to the same high school as Prince Charles?
It wasn't Prince Charles, it was the other one.
His parents wouldn't let him go.
Well, I can't mention the scholarship. Prince Charles went to Geelong Grammar. And most of the time, he was actually up in country Victoria because they had boarding schools and classes in country Victoria. He spent very little time in Geelong. I won a scholarship to Geelong College, which was a lesser of the two schools. But what Omar says is true, that my mum and dad turned them down and said, no, you can't have the scholarship. To be slightly fair, the scholarship was for books. I'm not sure if it was anything else. It wasn't for anything like living in a boarding school or probably for transport or anything like that. Now, I didn't get much detail about it, and I was a long, long way from it. It was way on the other side of Geelong, and we didn't have a car. I didn't get that much detail about it, that's the bit I've got. But I know if I had been my parents, I would have moved heaven and earth to take up that scholarship. So when your dad had chances at TAMA, and your mum, whenever they arose, and all the other children, Omar and I made sure that those children had the chance to do what they had won on merit. So, I did not want them having to say they couldn't do the things that they had earned because we were poor.
Also, while your opa was at primary school, he was ducks of every single year, and he still got some of the school books that he got as a
boy. I got school books, yes. Yeah, that was true. There was 1 year I was second, but that was about grade two. Otherwise, yeah, I was top of the class.
How did you manage to finish school when you were just 14?
I just walked out.
How did you finish it, John? You went to night school.
Hey?
How did you finish school?
Well, I had no real interest or concern in school because I knew I was going to have to leave. My parents had told me that.
How did you finish, John? After you'd done all that, when you left school, how did you end? Between school and university, what study did you do?
Oh, I don't know if that was a question, but anyway, all right. Without wanting to go into too much boring detail, I started doing courses as much as anything because the postmaster I worked with put me onto a teacher who lived in the same street as the post office. And I did year 10, 11, 12, and was complicated with that, but we'll leave it at that. The first of those years, in fact, which was year 10, was a complete waste of time, as it turned out. Long story, not my fault. Eventually after that, I started studying accountancy, but I never liked accountancy. Never wanted to be an accountant. And then after that, I found a good reason to study, and that was to be a social worker. And I studied year 12 to be a social worker and qualified to go to the social work course. And I had to get very, very high marks. But that was a period of 11 years. So that wasn't quick. 61 to 72. 61 I left school, 72 I started university, so it took some amount of time to get that far.
I heard you did some quiz shows.
Oh yes, I did a couple of quiz shows. I would have liked to have done more, but I couldn't negotiate the computers. I couldn't beat them. That was the reason I had to stop. I would have kept going otherwise. Yes, I did two quiz shows. I did Wheel of Fortune, and I did The Weakest Link. And I got voted off The Weakest Link, and they told me afterwards, the people who voted me off, and you stood there in a circle, and then you nominated somebody that had to go and leave, and all of a sudden they nominated me. They told me afterwards, they said, we nominated you because we knew you were going to win. Oh, okay, thank you. Strange reason. The Weakest Link, I went on that, you had to, Wheel of Fortune, I went on that, and you sort of had to guess words. It's hard to describe any more than that. And luckily enough, I guessed correctly. And then you had a wheel that you, well, it's called a Wheel of Fortune, that you spun around at all sorts of various prizes. And the one that I got, and I got the answer for, very easy answer, was a car. So that was good, but I think a better thing that I got was a trip down the Murray River with Omar. That was great fun. About five, six days worth, I think.
Where's the car now?
Ah, long, long gone in the scrap merchant. It was smashed up.
Oh no.
Not me, I didn't do it. It was smashed up, yes. So that's one of those things that happens.
Who smashed it?
Oh, no, that's not fair. Who smashed it, Sadie?
I don't know.
Oh dear. Am I permitted to say?
Yes.
Auntie Patricia.
How did she smash it?
Oh, you'd have to ask her exactly, but she drove it into a pole. Your dad's being very naughty here. She drove it into a pole. But she didn't have much choice. It was a very, very, very bad corner that she was coming around all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. They've actually since fixed it up. It's out in Belconnen, and they have actually since fixed it up. So, but that was one of those things.
Now, I don't think my dad would really answer me if I asked him. So, what is the worst thing that my dad has done as a child?
Well, I don't know. Well, I wouldn't know what it is because it depends on who you ask. I was such a good kid.
Can't think of anything.
You didn't see Omar's face.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Now, your dad was good. It was your Uncle Stephen that was very naughty.
Well, yeah, we can give you a few for Uncle Stephen, but no, I can't think of anything for your dad.
He'll listen to it.
Okay,
you know,
well
you
then.
Stephen will listen to it.
Oh, okay. Well then, Stephen, this goes out to you. Opa, what is the naughtiest thing that Stephen has ever done?
Well, he did them to himself, I think, didn't he? Probably the naughtiest thing he did was smash his bike onto a pile of rocks and split his knee open.
No, he also shaved his head.
What?
Shaved his head.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, I forgot that one. Yeah, when he was 9, your dad took him to the barber to get a haircut. They both had a haircut. And your dad came back, his haircut was all right. But Stephen had his head shaved completely.
Oh, wow.
In the days in which people didn't do that, they do a bit more now. And I said to Stephen, I said, all right, that's fine, you can do that. But sure, and it was coming up for winter, it was about May. But I said, you are not to wear a hat, not to have anything on the head, you just have to get through it. And what he did was, he was happy with that, and then he went to school with all his mates, and they said, oh, look at your shaved head, wow. Can we touch it? So he said, yes, you can touch it, but you've got to pay some money, and he got enough money to buy a paddle pop for himself and two of his mates.
Oh, wow.
There you go. So he made all the money out of it.
The luckiest thing your dad did was he wasn't really an adult yet, I don't think, but he climbed up onto the roof to fix the TV aerial and he fell off and he hurt his back and he's still got a problem with his back.
Who?
David.
You do?
Yeah, but it's a good thing that they probably won't be able to hear you because the microphone's not that sensitive. It was the 14th of July 2002, I think.
Yeah.
My dad told me to ask about Stephen's baby shoe.
Baby shoe? Yes, when we went to Queanbeyan, we had the baby shoes of David, Patricia and Stephen made into gold. Stephen had just started school. He wanted to take it to school to show his mates. I said, okay, but you've got to be careful. Don't lose it. Well, he lost it.
Oh, no.
Yes, on the way home, we think. Now, everybody searched everywhere, but no, we couldn't find it.
Do you still have the other baby shoes?
We've still got the other two somewhere, I think.
Is it real gold?
That's, I don't know if it's real gold. I think it's sort of...
It's copper. I've got my
silver
own.
Silver or something?
I can show you at home.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so... But Stephen lost his.
That must be very devastating.
Well, we probably thought, well, we shouldn't have used 6 or so we probably shouldn't have let him go.
He wasn't devastated, but I still am.
Yeah. Anything else? You've learned all these other things
about... They're all getting about everybody else now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Hit it. Yeah. Alright. Get in there before the bashing the baby on the back is overtakes your voices. Sadie's been very quiet.
Do you want to add any questions, Sadie?
Nope.
Alice, what about you?
Nope.
What are you doing?
She's walking. Okay. Is that it? It's been a long interview now.
Yeah, thanks, Opa.
Okay, well, I hope the world loves it. Okay. Thank you very much for that.
Bye.